Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Hey everybody, this is Devin Katayama. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that this episode contains a brief mention of suicide. The city of Berkeley recently decided to rename a small strip along Shattuck Street after an activist named Kala Bagai. She was one of the first South Asian women to live on the West Coast, and this renaming is a big deal for South Asians and other Asian Americans who want to feel seen in their communities. But it also matters because Kala Bagai's story isn't the traditional one you hear, about the local heroes who get streets and monuments named after them.
For us, she's a symbol of all of the people that got pushed out and the displacement that continues to happen in our communities.
Racist neighbors in Berkeley drove Kala Bagai out of town about 100 years ago, and a lot of her later activism was the kind of work that didn't make headlines. But that's exactly why some people feel like she is the perfect person to represent the past and the present. I'm Devin Katayama. Welcome to The Bay.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
Kala Bagai and her husband, Vaishnadas Bagai, and their three children immigrated to the U.S. from present-day Pakistan. They arrived in San Francisco in 1915. And they had sold all of their belongings and brought that money with them to make a life for themselves outside of colonized India.
Barnali Ghosh is the curator of the Berkeley South Asian Radical History Walking Tour, which she does with her husband, Anirvan Chatterjee. The tour takes groups around Berkeley and shares stories of South Asian people and activism in the city. You're also going to hear part of an interview between Kala Bagai and her grandson that was recorded back in 1982.
When I came to this country, I was about 21 years of age. I had three children, Jagmohan, Matanmohan, and Rammohan.
Vaishnav was also interested in working with the Gadar Party, which was an anti-colonial diaspora movement that brought together farmers and students, and that was headquartered in San Francisco. Berkeley was definitely a big part of how the Gadar Party came together, because many of the students who were in the Gadar Party, like Kartar Singh Sarabha and Gobind Bihari Lal, had come here to Berkeley to study, but then sort of got caught up in trying to plan this militant movement to take down the British in India.
He wanted to leave the slave country and want to come to America because America is free country.
So when Kala and her husband, Vaishnav, and their three children arrived in the Bay Area, it was during that time of a lot of militant activism planning that was going on here. But there were also people here who were just students, who were here to study. There were working class folks who were building railroads. California was a place where people were coming to find refuge and to make a life for themselves, especially becoming farmers and laborers.
I couldn't speak English. I didn't know one word of English at the time, and everything was strange to me in this country.
So what was Berkeley like for people of color and South Asian immigrants during that time? Was it a welcoming place?
So as far as we know, there were about 2,000 South Asians living along the West Coast, and there was a lot of anti-Asian sentiment. There was anti-Asian Exclusion Act. Folks were definitely, working class folks were definitely facing the brunt of that. And definitely the initial anti-Asian racism that was happening was directed towards Chinese folks and then Japanese folks, and then eventually also towards Indians.
Unlike many immigrants arriving in the U.S. at the time, Kala Bagai and her family did have one big advantage: money.
the fact that they had money, they were welcomed more easily into the country. And, you know, when they came in, they were able to have some kind of lodging, some kind of apartment that they could rent. They could set up a small business. They could take a little bit of time in finding their feet in the Bay Area. But that's also why they could afford to get a house in Berkeley. When they decided to move to Berkeley, when they pulled up to the house that they had got, they realized that their neighbors had effectively locked them out and would not let them enter their house. And it's really moving for me, I think, to know that Kalabagay remembered this as part of her oral history so many years later.
We bought a house in Berkeley. Berkeley and Oakland, bought a house, and it happened to be was an English people's house. English people were there. And so our house, we paid for it, part of it, I guess, and they locked, but inside they locked the doors. They wouldn't let us in because we were from India.
They were neighbors? They were next door neighbors?
Neighbors.
They locked your house, so you couldn't get into your own house.
No.
That is not what the expectation was of them moving to the U.S. They expected this to be a land that had overthrown the British, that was a land for the free, and they had bought into that.
All our luggage and everything was loaded on the trucks. And so I told Mr. Bagai, I said, I don't want to live in this neighborhood. I don't want to live in this house because they might hurt my children, and I don't want it.
Our communities have a history of when we go through trauma, we bury them for survival. So even the fact that we know that her family experienced this in Berkeley is a chance happening.
So what happened with Kalabagay and her family after that incident in Berkeley?
Eventually, they ended up making a home for themselves in San Francisco. They had a store called Bagay's Bazaar on Fillmore Street. They lived above the store. And, you know, it looked like things were finally starting to sort of settle in. But then you see again, that not only did they become the victims of local racism, but then they also became victim to federal anti-immigrant policies, where because of the Bhagat Singh Thind case of 1923, which effectively reversed any citizenship that South Asians had acquired, Vaishnadas Bagai, who had applied and received citizenship in 1921, 2 years later, he had been stripped of that citizenship. Now, he essentially became a stateless person because as somebody who was anti-British, he refused to apply for a British passport, which meant that, yes, he could be in the U.S. and he could have some amount of freedom, but essentially he was trapped. Eventually, in 1928, he would rent a room in San Jose. He would have taken out a life insurance policy, and he went on to kill himself and take his own life. And he left a very powerful suicide note in which he called living in the U.S. as if it was like living life in a gilded cage. You felt that you had some amount of freedom, but really all the expectations and hopes that he had come with here were being destroyed by all of this racism, that bridges were being burnt that he had tried to build with this country.
So what happens to Kala Bagai and her family after that?
Kala and her three sons continue to live in San Francisco. She puts all of them through college. And at some point in 1934, she remarries. She marries a family friend of theirs, Mahesh Chandra. And then eventually she moves to Southern California to be closer to her younger son. And that's when, you know, she starts to be the sort of community builder This place that immigrants come to, that every immigrant who visits Southern California eventually ends up meeting, she just became really visible in terms of somebody who was providing that kind of warmth and welcome that she didn't necessarily get, especially in Berkeley. I would like to think that some of it had to do with some distance from the tragedy that she had faced with losing Vaishno, some support from her marrying again, even though that was very taboo. She had also, you know, started to learn tennis and learn English. And in 1946, because of the Loose Cellar Act, she was able to apply for citizenship and gain citizenship in 1950. Then in Southern California, she, along with other women, they initially set up an organization called the American Wives of India Group, and they raised money for famine relief, and they raised money for refugees related to the partition, and then they went on to do more cultural exchange. So all of the bridge that was burned by Vaishno's death, to me, that was something that she was trying to rebuild. So I think all of that really made her be able to be the person she had always wanted to be. One of the reasons we focused on her is because her activism and her community building was a quieter kind. Not quiet in that she didn't have a voice, but quiet in the sense, you know, it's sort of the long relationship building work that often our mothers and grandmothers do behind the scenes.
When the city of Berkeley first put out a proposal to rename a part of Shattuck Street, Barnali started researching South Asian people who'd be good to nominate. Barnali says there were a lot of people to choose from, but when she came across an old interview with Kala Bagai and her family from 1982, her story stuck with Barnali.
We immediately thought about the fact that there were hundreds of street names in Berkeley, and yet not one of them is visibly Asian American. And yet Berkeley is a city that's 20% Asian American. And it's the same thing when it comes to gender. Very few streets are named after women. So, you know, we were like, we definitely wanted to take this opportunity to see some representation of the Asian American community. But eventually we settled on Kala Bagai.
Well, it resonated with you, and you started a campaign to get a street named after Kala Bagai. And recently, the Berkeley City Council approved that.
Starting with item number 11, I wanted to acknowledge that this item renames Shattuck Avenue East between Center and University as Kala Bagai Way. And I know there was a lot of activism around this and making this happen. And just for those of you—
Why is that so important? And how is her story different from the traditional story that we hear about people who, you know, get streets named after them or monuments named after them?
Many times when streets are named and they're named after achievers, the city claims them as their own. And the city tells the story of how they played a part in that person's achievement. And yet we have stories of people who've suffered racism in the city. And why can't naming be a way to reconcile with a difficult part of our history and to provide some corrective to that, rather than it being purely a celebration that doesn't take into consideration the harder journeys that some people made through our city.
And I also find it interesting that she was actually pushed out.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, we were definitely trying things that were paradigm shifting. And for us, she's a symbol of all of the people that got pushed out and the displacement that continues to happen in our communities. So this kind of story has continuing relevance. It alerts us to the fact that if we don't actually prevent displacement, if we don't have policies that welcome new immigrants and refugees, if that's only on paper and we're not actually building housing that can accommodate them or having anti-displacement policies that can keep folks who want to live here, that, you know, those are just things we say. And I think even on our walking tour, you know, we continuously talk about how protest might be the most visible form of activism, but it's not the only way that somebody can engage in activism. And I think by elevating only a certain kind of change, we actually keep people out of the movements.
Mm-hmm.
Kalabagai's story for me is relevant today as well. And it really reminds us of sort of the anti-immigrant hate that we saw 100 years ago show up again. And we have to remind ourselves that the rights that we won at that time, we cannot take for granted. And that requires both protesting on the streets and voting in elections. I think for me, though, the most powerful piece of this is around housing, because Berkeley is still a very segregated city. Being segregated in this way means that we haven't achieved our goal of being a welcoming city.
Barnali says that another really meaningful thing that happened during the city's naming process was when the Confederated villages of Lashan, Ohlone, decided to support the campaign for Kalabagai Way. An Ohlone name was also being considered, but at the last minute, the group threw their support behind Kalabagai.
The letter that Corina Gold wrote in support, and I'm going to quote from her letter, where she says, when the opportunity to participate in the Shattuck name change came up, the tribe wholeheartedly support the name change to Kalabagai Way. Because we want to acknowledge that there have been and continue to be people who come to our territory who have faced and resisted oppression and whose stories should be lifted up and remembered.
Barnali Ghosh is the curator of the Berkeley South Asian Radical History Walking Tour. Thanks also to the South Asian American Digital Archive and Rani Bagai, Kalabagai's granddaughter, for giving us permission to use the interview you heard in this episode. This episode of The Bay was produced by Erica Cruz Guevara and our editor, Alan Montesilio. We're made by your local public media station, KQED. I'm Devin Katayama. That's it for today. Talk to you next time.